p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, networking with all our regional FM stations and across the globe on gbcghana.com, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program where we'll be examining the issues from the perspective of the newsmakers and the experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, managing the economy in an election year, the challenges and difficult decisions. When does it get to the tipping point? When the four presidential candidates sold their vision, how did their views influence the political process? And also, the Mensa Otterbill tape saga, what are the possible legal implications? We'll be taking much more on these issues as we also take your text on 024-097-1087. It's Behind the News and you are getting us live on Unique 95.7 and Ubuntu 96.5. Our text line once again is 024-097-1087. The December 7 election is just 23 days away. One question which consistently comes up in an election year is management of the economy. Tonight on Behind the News, we are looking at how challenging it has been in managing the economy in an election year. And we are taking particular interest in this year. We have joining us in the studio today, the Deputy Minister of the Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning, Seth Tekpe. You are welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much and good evening to your listeners.
So much has been said about the economy in an election year. Is 2012 a little different from what we used to have previously?
Thank you very much. I would say 2012 is a bit unique in the sense that if we go back to 2010, when we did the rebasing, we all know that almost immediately we became a middle income country, and after the elections, population census, our per capita income remained at 1,000 plus, approximately 1,300, and that still crossed the barrier, which is 1,005. And then by 2011, you know, we had become an oil exporting country, you know, which itself consolidates our lower middle income status. And therefore, going into 2012, one can say that we have become a country that is hopeful of remaining middle income and moving into the higher echelons of, you know, the middle income countries, because there are tiers even among developing countries and middle income countries. So if you put things in this, you know, context, then you can say that this election is the one election, you know, which seems to cement all the ingredients that is needed for us to grow the economy and become, if one may say, richer for that matter. But it comes with other challenges as well. As you know, we also implemented significant policies, such as the single spine, you know, which has added to some wage pressures. We may have the opportunity, you know, to, you know, discuss, you know, some of this. Mm-hmm. But there are areas where 2012 as an election year is or remains the same as other election years.
Challenging in terms of expenditure? Are we pushing so much?
I think once you are in an election year, I think there are a lot of parties, you know, the various parties, you know, prepare their manifesto, they present their manifesto. Various communities become very active. You know, various interest groups, you know, also become active. And therefore, you have activities that are normally associated, let's say, an example would be strikes tend to go up, you know, the demand on political leaders from various communities also tend to, you know, to go up. but you also want to be sure that you don't destabilize the economy in an election year, simply because it's an election year, and therefore you need that balance.
We'll be looking at what you've managed to put in place, because even as we speak, there are still a lot of pressures coming from, I would call it wage pressure, still coming directly to you. But you mentioned in your introductory remark that after 2011, Ghana's position was consolidated in the middle income status, the lower middle income status. Does that mean that if we have not earned income from oil, we could have dropped?
As I indicated, the the economy had been growing. You remember in 2008, the economy grew by 8.4%, which at the time was, you know, high. And then going into 2009, we realized that the economy had become a bit overheated, and therefore various stabilization programs were put in place, including the program, you know, with the fund. And as a government, we did promise that we would take the economy back to the path of, you know, accelerated, you know, growth and accelerated growth. So unlike our previous experiences with structural adjustments, with economic recovery and others, within a space of 2 years, we had reasonably brought the macroeconomic and other indicators to a stable level where the economy started growing again by 2010. In answer, direct answer to your question, as I stated, what the first thing that would have tipped the scales back in the developing country was the population census. You know, our population increased, and there was a fear that even though we had rebased, you know, and had become lower middle income, since the what determines lower middle income is the per capita income, which is your output or national income divided by the population. If your population is increasing faster, then your per capita income could slide again. You know, but that didn't happen. And then we got into the oil era. But I wouldn't say that our growth performance is just on account of oil. We grew at 14%, you know, 14.4% in 20 at the end of 2011. But what most people lose sight of is that the non-oil economy grew at a respectable 8%, which means that we were remaining consistent.
But since then, we've heard other concerns that even with the oil, we are dropping from the 14 and coming below 10.
I think there is a bit of mathematics there.
Mm-hmm.
When you grow at 7% over a GDP base, you know, that is 36 billion or let's say 40 billion. It is not the same as growing at 8% on a base, you know, that is 65 billion or 70 billion. So the oil added a spike, the rebasing added a spike, and therefore I would say that, contrary to what most people, you know, say, a 7% plus increase or projected 8% growth in the economy is not bad. In fact, it's credible, because it's 7% of a lower denominator.
Could we have done better?
Well, there are other factors which we have to consider. For example, we had stated, you know, that by this time, we would probably be producing and exporting about 100,000 barrels of oil. You know, as at the middle of the year, we were doing less than 60% because of the technical difficulties, you know, that, you know, arose. And then, but we are, then it rose to about 75%. I believe by now we are doing about 80,000 barrels a day, or 85,000 barrels. I think it's 85,000 barrels a day, which was the levels that were anticipated at the end of 2011. You know, so obviously, if the one sector of the economy which is new and which is the growth engine and on which, you know, we are looking into the future in terms of our energy and power diversification of the economy is not growing as fast as, you know, it should, then I would say that the growth we have achieved is still, you know, credible. But the important thing is going forward, whether we can grow. And as you know, a lot of programs have been and plans have been put in place, such as irrigation, the rehabilitation of the harbor railway road projects. I mean, these are all in the real sector of the economy.
Yeah.
And I believe that from next year, we shall return to a path of accelerated, you know, growth. But let me say that, let me repeat again that the growth rate at 7 to 8%, as we are likely to end up at the end of the year, is not, you know, one that is not. Remember that the budget itself had indicated, you know, a lower growth rate in the, not 14%, but a lower growth rate, you know, of between 8.5, you know, to 9%.
Mr. Tekin, let's look at some of the key challenges that you'll be facing in an election year. And we've alluded to it right from the beginning. People want their wages, they want salary increases. Certainly, it might sometimes even go against your projections. At least from what you are managing so far and what you have been told about the single spine, are we within range or we might have crossed the threshold that we set for the country for this particular year?
I think we're quite clear in the supplementary budget presented by my minister that the wage bill, you know, taking account of the single spine, had exceeded, you know, the estimates, and therefore we had to make, you know, other adjustments. So in as much as we want productivity, you know, in the civil and public, you know, services, our wage bill, you know, has increased. Let me use some numbers to explain. It is estimated that developing and emerging countries often spend about 35%, you know, of their revenue, you know, on wages. As we speak, because of the changes that we are making, we are spending 50%. That's at the time the supplementary budget was prepared. 50 to 55%, you know, of, you know, the revenues that we generate.
Is it sustainable? That trend is to continue.
An upward trend is not sustainable. You know, but let's take this year, for example, which is one of the challenges, you know, that we face, was the fact that the all the arrears could not be cleared in 2010 and 2011. And therefore, the arrears, part of the arrears, you know, were paid this year. In fact, most of the arrears for teachers and others, you know, were paid at the end of September and October.
We still have some claiming that they've not been seen to and are even on strike.
Well, I think they are on strike for reasons that are not substantially the payment of arrears. Some are premium, market premium. Some are the relativities. You know, the single spine came, the migration came with, you know, various changes to the structure of the wage bill. But these are issues that are before the Labour Commission and others and will be. But the point I'm making is that the substantial migration and the substantial payment of arrears has ended. And what that means is that the wage bill from November going into December will return to the levels where the single spine should be, not the old wage levels, but the single spine. Let me take the opportunity to explain also, you know, for that reason, that a lot of teachers in particular allege that their wages have been slashed. The wages have not been slashed. It is just that the payment of the allowances, sorry, or payment of the arrears have come to an end, and therefore they are down to levels that are not no longer. But obviously, in answer to your question, going forward, you know, as productivity increases, hopefully, in the public service, and as we grow the economy, we should definitely return, you know, the wages relative to other, you know, types of expenditure, like expenditure on goods and services, expenditure on maintenance, you know, of buildings, of vehicles, of whatever, in the public service, and above all, expenditure on development.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're talking about education infrastructure, health infrastructure, where you're talking about roads, you're talking about railways and harbors. If we are going to meet these from our internally generated resources, or if when we borrow for these developments as normally happens. We should be able to service our debt. Then wages cannot continue to squeeze these other expenditures, because it would only be at the expense of, you know, this capital. And I think this is the message, you know, which His Excellency the President has often
repeated. The concern is that sometimes you might have all your plans in place for the whole year, even if you must cross a threshold at a point in time. But government may be compelled to take some expediency decisions that may not be in the interest of the economy, because it's an election year. You know, sometimes you have been held by the tail. You must do things. Have you been brought to that point in the course of the year?
Let me answer in two parts. The first is, election year or no election year, slippages occur in an economy, and you have to be prepared to make the necessary adjustments. For example, if crude oil prices the international market increase, you don't have control over it. Obviously, now that we have become an oil exporting country, we look at it both ways. You know, but crude oil pricing, you know, has a different
effect. Some things, it's not an election year, it's passed on to the people.
Well, yes and no. I think that you would notice that, you know, in most cases, you don't want to destabilize the economy. And so governments often hesitate in passing it on, you know, and waiting to look at the trend to see if it will come down. And so you cushion it through other expenditure subsidy, because you take, you know, several factors into the economy. Secondly, for example, the city came under pressure, you know, this year significantly, which is a matter of part of what we are discussing, speculation as to what is going to happen in the election year, whether expenditures are going to be, you know, and then the changing structure of the economy.
I'll come to you on the issue of speculation, because it is big enough, and since even in the vice presidential debate, it came up. But joining us on the line now is Kweku Ajimamenu, former Deputy Minister of Finance in President Kufuor's government. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, my brother.
Thanks so much for your time. We are looking at the economy in an election year. Sometimes some of the very difficult decisions that governments must make, maybe to stay in power or to still steer the affairs of the economy in straight paths. For you, what was the major challenge when in government?
Well, I think the major challenge still continues to be a challenge, if my friend said will speak the truth. In an election year, there is a lot of demand on government expenditures in terms of things that people are expecting to enable them both for the government in power. And when you're in government, no government wants to lose election. So therefore, if people are writing on walls, on billboards, on banners, no toilets, no boats, no roads, no boats, no water, no boats, that demonstrates a lot of demand on what the government should do. And therefore, these things begin to become do things without that you're losing election. And therefore, government that is not seriously committed to financial discipline in an election year will begin to, issue contracts, award contracts to try to satisfy the electorate and to vote for them. And I believe this is a challenge. It used to be a challenge. And you need people who are committed to financial discipline to ensure that the macro stability we have doesn't get disturbed to do so.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this time around, they are not holding on to that, right? They started awarding new contracts. Those have been started. I don't know how they're going to pay for them. And I believe all these are adding to the pressures. The president is going around ordering them to do certain things, and contractors are working without payment. And I believe these will not augur well for the discipline that we are looking for and for the stability we want to actually maintain and sustain.
Yeah, you say financial discipline, but sometimes when you move around, you see that some of the things that governments are being compelled to do are things necessary for a community's development, things that will help them immediately. Don't you think sometimes governments must yield, not necessarily because of the votes?
Mm-hmm. Things that you come to inherit a state government, and for 3.5 years you couldn't do, and then all of a sudden in 2 months elections you want to do, and you pile all of them together, what do you think will happen? So if you couldn't do, the community could live without it for 3.5 years. Why can't they live without it for 3 months? So some of them are not very critical issues. Things that you don't do, people are dying. No. And there are friends that are just winning votes.
I was asking whether on hindsight you think you were compelled to take some of those decisions you are talking about.
Some of them, it's like you just want to buy votes. So you try to go in to do them. Right? And that is it.
Mr. Ajimamen, we'll try to pick your line again and get you. Yes, we'll try to get back to you. We seem to be losing you. It's not so clear here. Kwaku Ajimamen is former Deputy Minister of Finance in Kufuor's government. We'll try to get back to him soon so that he can finish his submission on it. But, Mr. Tekwa, you heard your colleague talking about the fact that sometimes it takes financial discipline to be able to tell people that once you've been able to wait for 3 years, crossing 3 months, won't still worry. If it's still on schedule, it will be done.
Well, thank you very much. I think you started by saying that if I will speak the truth. I think I did say from the beginning of the program that every government comes under that type of pressure. I did not shy away from the fact that, you know, the communities, I think I did mention, you know, that you face pressures from labor, you face pressures, you know, from the community, as you're saying, from constituents, MPs, everybody faces pressure. And I don't think that the pressure comes from only, you know, let's say the government dominant area. Remember, for example, particularly in swing constituencies, you have the opposition as well as the ruling government, you know, contesting for seats, which could change. And therefore, it shouldn't look as if, you know, all the...
So, for politicians, it is normal to do certain things not planned for
earlier. No, I'm coming to that.
Yeah.
That is what we must endeavor. You will face these pressures, but that is what we must endeavor, you know, to develop systems to be able. So let me give you an example. We have created, for example, a contract database, you know, which for the first time tells us clearly, contracts that are spread all over the country. Okay, for which reason? If you recall, the late Professor Mills and the current, you know, he said the citizenship of President Mahama have said that we should, as much as possible, you know, constrain ourselves not to spend outside the budget.
The budget.
And we have been doing this,
precisely,
you know,
that. I will hold you there. Please hold your thoughts on that particular issue. We have Sajmamen on the line again. Sajmamen, so sorry we lost you earlier. The line deteriorated. Well, you were developing a point as to the financial discipline and not really yielding to the people. And Mr. Tekwa just mentioned that there are sometimes swing constituencies. And for politicians, you know, there are times that you may yield.
No, the point I tried to make, sorry, before my good friend comes in, is that, you know, it should not be represented as though governments were, you know, implementing critical projects that, you know, result in buying of votes or, for some reason, benefit, you know, only the ruling. I'm making the point, you know, as my good friend knows,
I guess you can hear your colleague in the studio.
Yes. Let me give an example. We were battling in Parliament over creation of 45 new constituencies, 45 new districts. What are the cost implications of 45 new districts created in an election year? Ask state. When we're in Parliament, nobody asked about that. They're supposed to give them seed money. They're supposed to rent offices. They're supposed to hire labor. They are supposed to give them some equipment to start working with. Can you hear me properly?
Yes, I can hear you.
These are all costs. The major objective of these 45 new constituencies was to give government an undue advantage over the opposition, largest opposition party, to win more parliamentary seats. Then you create costs with it.
Mr. Ajimamenu, please let me take you on that particular one. The evidence shows that it is not just by the creation of the constituencies that you win more seats. And some analysis shows that even previously when MPP gave more constituencies, they didn't necessarily benefit from the creation. How do you respond?
I'm a politician, and I know what I'm talking about, right? What we foresee now is the fact that NDC may not win all the 45 constituencies. They may even lose more. But the prior objective of that action was to try to make sure that they kept ourselves constituencies to win. And that is the bottom line. Why will you want, the whole point is that whether they will win or not, why will a government in an election year want to create 45 new districts and bring in costs that will come with it for us to fund in an election year? And then not forgetting that you already committed yourself to implement single spine. That has a lot of cost implications. Some workers have not been, introduced to it yet. You're going to do that. There are certain traditional expenditures that you by all means have to make. And then you go and bring in these new costs in an election year. What do you think will happen? MPP may have done that, right? Yes. But if that didn't give us any good results, why do we want to continue to do that this time round? These are some of the things I'm talking about. That they are discretionary. We can avoid them. But for some reason, we continue doing them. And then when you create these challenges, and you turn around, what do we talk about? How do you explain this?
Yeah.
Right. There are certain critical issues. That one, I would say yes. When a bridge is broken, when it rains, and the road is not passable. These are critical issues that we cannot avoid.
Yeah. Spending
money, so.
Mr.
Jumaine, the things that we do, that I think are really not necessary. Not necessary.
Yeah.
We just
there is this other issue that other proponents of a debate on a political year want to put into the public domain and should be looked at very well. They say political parties are given a 4-year mandate, but almost everything done in the fourth year seems to be given some interpretation.
Not necessarily so. Let me tell you honestly. When you go to jurisdictions like Australia and Canada, 6 months election, government doesn't make any new big policy. It is not allowed. Some new expenditures are not allowed. But they also have 4-year mandate as well. You see, we should be prudent in our spending. We should be prudent in certain decisions that we take. We should be prudent in certain actions that we take and expenditures that will come with it. As simple as this. If you are committed to, seriously committed to financial discipline, there are certain things we should not try to bring into whatever we are doing. We introduced school uniforms in 2009. Initially, there were selections from district, probably based on the issue. Ask that, what has happened to it now? This year, election year, when people are asking, what happened to that promise? What could they do about it? There is no money. They have stopped it. And nothing has happened. But they keep on bringing in new expenditures, new projects, new things that will take money away. You see?
But from what we hear from Mr. Tekwe, they've been trying to. Mr. Tekwe, I don't know whether you can quickly respond and get.
Well, I think that we should.
Back from there.
Let me state, one fact. 45% of contracts we are servicing to date were awarded before 2009. And I think that you would agree with me that any time the president or the late president or the current president went to a community, and inaugurated, cut the sword or did some projects, my good friend and others would say that these projects were started, by the NPP. So what I want to suggest to him that many of the projects that we are implementing, we did not put them aside. We did not put just because they have a color. And you can
they well advertised for people to know that this is a series of activities you are undertaking. So if it falls within the fourth year, then no one will have.
No, I think that we should be careful with this fourth year thing because we present annual budgets. But as Mr. Jumaine, himself knows, behind the annual budget there's a 3-year rolling budget. So the 2012 budget that was presented to Parliament actually had an additional 2013-2014. So we project, and therefore, and this is the synchronization that I was going to talk about. That in our case, we are synchronizing through the contract database, projects, and saying that if you start a project this year, and you are not going to complete it, we started last year through the database. You have to make sure that it will be encumbered from your revenue for 2013 and for 2014. As a result of which, we are not rushing. to award new contracts. Much of the programs that he's talking about are pipeline projects, some of which were started, you know, pre-2009, which are being implemented. Secondly, we are not starting major projects in comparison with, for example, the Gang of Six. We all know about the Gang of Six. These were major capital infrastructure projects. We are talking about the Medina Road. We are talking about the Pejua Road. We are talking about the Chimota Road. We are talking about Kumasi Sufo Line. These are major projects which you don't anticipate to spend on an to use your budget on an annual basis to spend. In fact, we had to issue, in our case, when we talk about any major project, I can assure you that there is a source of funds to finance it from next year. Let's talk about the Takoradi Harbour. Let's talk about the railway project and whatever. The 3 billion CDB facility, you know, we should have been disbursed. It's ready for disbursement.
And it's planned.
And it's planned. For the next year. Exactly. So the issue of fiscal discipline, this is where the issue of fiscal discipline and planning comes in. And that is the qualitative difference between what we are doing, you know, and what.
Let me hold you. A quick one from you, Mr. Ajmamenu. Whoever takes office the next year will be looking at the investor covenant to work. The Ghanaian electorate will decide. But how, in your activities, are you ensuring that there is still that level of confidence going forward?
Well, I think there is some good level of confidence going forward, despite the fact that the NDC has messed us up, accumulating what we are seeing this time round. Everybody weeping for money. The system is so, hard to live in, you know. But then we believe that when we look at our revenues that are coming in, and the oil revenues especially, and we use them prudently, I think we can shift the economy very quickly. Look at what happened in 2000 when Kufo came to office. Ghana, we declared Ghana a happy country. But within years, we managed to move ourselves around and corrected the imbalances. And we moved on. And we created a lot of fiscal space that we are using now. It takes so many loans and things like that. You see, beyond the sidelines, you know, I have asked Tech himself that they should run a very limited 1 year, 12-month debt servicing schedule. And let us look at translations into cities. And that is where our challenge is. You see, when your city devalues to the level that has devalued this year, and we are servicing debt, if we are servicing 20 million debt, we're 20 million Ghana cities. Now, it is going to be the same 20 million, we're now going to come to 40 million Ghana cities.
But you still believe there is a high level of investor confidence?
Yes, you realize that. Debt servicing alone is taking a bigger chunk of what you may have budgeted because you have allowed our city to depreciate to that level.
Mr. Ajmamenu,
that happens that way. You are short of cash to do things that you should do in the system. That is a big challenge.
Mr. Kwaku Ajmamenu, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening on Behind the News. Thank you for sharing your concerns. That's a former deputy finance minister in the Kufo administration. Thanks so much. Mr. Tepe, we are wrapping up. Investor confidence, the level, at least that my man is saying that there may be challenges, but still, that one is there. Everybody will be counting on it.
I think the GIPC figures are clearly there for anybody. We always say that let us have confidence in our institutions. You know, go to Ghana Investment Promotion Center. You will see a high level of investor confidence. Go to, you know, the bond market as we experienced recently, the bonds that we issued to pay for some of the projects that the Gang of Six, which I was talking about, were oversubscribed on two successive occasions. This is what confidence is about. When the city started depreciating, we moved in rapidly, quickly, despite an election year, you know, to put in measures. You know what debates, I was in this studio to discuss, you know, those measures. You know what, you know, our opponents said at the time, you know, that the city will never stabilize. We said that they shouldn't talk down the economy. The city, you know, has started appreciating. And we are going to end the year on a good note. So I want to assure, you know, Ghanaians, just a quick point on the oil revenues. I think that Mr. Ajmamenu, you know, knows, and Ghanaians know, that in last year's budget, the 2012 budget, the current year budget, we itemized project by project how the oil revenues were utilized. We showed in detail the sectors where I believe that that is the reason why the oil revenue politics, you know, has not, you know, been accentuated in an election year. If we were to have misused, you know, those revenues, if we were to have not applied them according to the Petroleum Revenue Management Act, I believe that there would have been a very, you know, serious debate.
I know if we have to spend the whole hour, there are still so many issues, but we'll try to get you back and get to talk much more on the other issues. We want to thank you so much for coming, Mr. Tekwe. That is the Deputy Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, joining us as we looked at some issues in relation to the economy in an election year. Thank you so much. You are still live on Behind the News, and you are getting us on Sunrise FM.
Thank you for listening.
And thanks so much on Sunrise FM in Kofodia. In a manner that sends the debate back to the church and politics, Dr. Mensah Otalo has been pushed to the roofs in another tape saga. The preacher man in the tapes is heard to have made statements that seem to cast political insinuations. We'll be getting back to it very soon and then look at the implications. Are there really legal implications? Can you take somebody's voice and put it out there, or once it's in the public domain, it's allowed for you to go ahead with just anything with it? We'll be getting back to it. We still want to remind you that we are still live on Behind the News and getting us on Ura Radio and also on Radio Upper West. Since 1992, the state broadcaster, the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation, has been providing the platform for political parties to present their policies and programs in an election year in a bid to deepen Ghana's democracy. However, never in the history of the Fourth Republic has GBC played a more active role in promoting the vision and policies of the political parties, like the 2012 elections. For instance, the corporation has initiated several programs to enable the parties sell themselves and their products to the voting public. And just yesterday, the state broadcaster hosted the four presidential candidates who could not get the opportunity to feature in the IEA presidential debate. PPP's Dr. Pakwesindum Akwesia, they're also known as UDK of the United Front Party, Dr. Henry Latte of GCPP, and the independent candidate Jacob Oseyebua were given the chance to trade their visions in a presidential debate telecast live on GTV. The four presidential candidates addressed some critical issues relating to the national economy. We want to listen to some of their thoughts. First, Dr. Pakwesindum of the Progressive People's Party, who stressed the need to create more jobs and also to transform the economy.
The economy under President Papa Kwesi Indom will be operated with a single purpose vision to create jobs. We cannot put food on the table if we are going to continue to be exporters of raw materials. No economy has improved. No people have prospered when the economy is based on exporting raw materials. And therefore, we want to bring the economy back home by transforming the raw materials that we have, the gold that we have, the cocoa that we have, and others that exist. Transform them so that we can create jobs. And you also work with discipline. An economy that does not have discipline cannot generate the resources that are needed internally. And therefore, through the national identification system and other means, we'll make sure we know who is here, who is working here, who needs to pay taxes, how we mobilize resources so that the economy can have the funds that's needed. The Progressive People's Party is interested in an economy that puts money in ordinary people's pockets. And you do that only by ensuring that we create jobs.
That's Dr. Pakwesindum. For his part, Dr. Henry Latte of the Great Consolidated Popular Party promised to promote the agriculture sector in fulfillment of the party's domestication policy.
The economy has been brilliant. For the last 25 years, all successive governments have tried to do well. And the last 3 years, it's been fantastic. Macroeconomics has been kept at very, very good. Every government is judged by macroeconomics. Right now, they've laid the foundation. The infrastructure development that will come in will help. But it's important to help Ghanaians first. Ghana first. If we don't help our Ghanaians, how are we going to succeed? We need to be able to give Ghanaians the Ghana economic empowerment. Give them security to be able to have money to do business. I know most Ghanaians want to run a business. If you give them the money, they'll work. They'll make more money for Ghana than what we gave them. In the farming areas, when we are talking about us, we say, eat what you grow, grow what you eat. It doesn't mean just farming. It means everything that we produce in Ghana. And we are able to give Ghanaians the strength and the security that if they go into business, we'll help them. We have to become an entrepreneurial country. Everybody can do business, but they have to be helped. They should be given capacity building and then the money to be able to lift Ghana up. Once Ghanaians are up and they have money in their pockets, you tell them that they can't do. Tell me anyone in Ghana who doesn't want to buy his own house or buy a car or own properties. They all want to do it, but they haven't got the means to do it. We in government will give that money. If you go to America and other places, they're giving stimulus to companies, billions of dollars. Why can't we do the same for Ghanaians? Give the Ghanaians the money and I'm sure they'll make Ghana proud.
Dr. Henry Latte of the GCPP, the independent presidential candidate Jacob Osei-Yeboah, said he will protect the interests of Ghanaian traders and indigenous businesses. He promised visionary leadership if elected.
We have three sectors of economy in all Africa nations. We need to make sure that we expand the rural economy of those in the traditional sector. And I would want to come out with a practical way of going about that. Let's assume that we're talking about the farming community. What we need to do, and that is an advice that I gave to one MP, that you're coming from a farming area. What stops you to join forces with the chiefs? So that you pick up the lands of the individual farm and use them as a share so that you can develop a business plan for a particular farm produce, let's say maize. And then you can use the skills and the knowledge that you have to look for market for such a produce outside. Then what you can do is that you have to employ the same people within the community to work in the farm, and on monthly basis they can have ends meet.
The UFP presidential candidate, Kwesi Adeodike, however, promised to reinvigorate the private sector of the economy and also add value to Ghana's raw materials.
My focal areas to improve upon the economy is to enhancing the private sector to be competitive enough in the global market, as well as embarking on agrarian revolution to make sure we have modernized agriculture. I will also make sure we mobilize the natural resources in this country and develop it. I will make sure foreign direct investment in this country will be channeled into production sector so that Ghanaians will have the freedom to do their small-scale businesses without any interferences. A Kwesi-Adeodike government will not allow, tolerate or countenance this kind of nefarious investors who only come here to undermine our development agendas. I'll make sure we utilize everything and add value to our mineral and natural resources, especially our farm produce.
But what is GBC's own assessment of yesterday's event? Were there a few problems and challenges? The director of television, Mike Amunkwafu, is on the line with us to help us assess what went on. That is their program. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
I guess you've had some feedback so far. Did the event meet your expectations?
Absolutely. I think that we did not really have much anxiety, being the first time notwithstanding. We're confident that the call from the nation's broadcaster will be honored. And that's exactly what happened. We thought that there was reason to have some trepidation at a certain time. You know, by 6:45 latest, everybody's in and ready to take off on the debate.
Yeah. Even though you are saying they were intrepid, some consider the whole thing as not as exciting as the IEA one. Do you share that sentiment?
Well, I think that it is a matter of scales. You know, I would not want to make any strong comments on this, you know, but clearly you're looking at two different categories. And my own impression, I want to think that I'm not biased, was that it was a good effort coming from us the first time, and also the participation was keen. I am inclined to think that the rapport that you'd expect from a debate, we're able to begin that. I realize that the candidates were beginning to warm up to the natural exchange that they could have from podium to podium and all that. And that is what has been the general expectation of a debate, where you can have rebuttals and things like that. You have some kind of interaction between the candidates. I think that began to happen, and it was a good sign.
Yeah. Some were saying they were expecting some audience, but you didn't have so much of them. Was that the situation?
Well, did it from our studios. And our studio is not as big as a soundstage at Gamma, for example. But what we did was have a fair representation of the participating parties and also some a few people from press and so who filled the audience gallery that we provided. But in the meantime, it was a very quiet affair. It was very keen. It was nice, really. I deliberately watched it on the screen and not from the studio, dispassionately. And I think it was a good feel.
Well, there are other concerns, issues of corruption, health, and other sensitive issues. They were all not covered. Are there plans in place to incorporate these and maybe later discussions?
We're going to have a second debate. What we did was we had thematic areas. And for this first debate, we identified the four areas, and that's exactly what we said we're going to do. So the contestants were required to address issues on the economy, on agri, on education, and on energy. And that's exactly what we did. So we're expecting that we're going to have a battery of different subjects and areas for them to deal with at the next debate.
We didn't see so many follow-up questions coming in immediately to take on the candidates on what they might have stated. Was that a format?
Well, we wanted to be as informal as possible. We wanted it to be as relaxed as possible. We had our own criteria in terms of the time that was allotted to each contestant to offer their opinion on different areas of the subject. We had three questions for every sector, you know, and then there were a number of follow-up questions, yes. And the whole idea was actually more to generate debate between the contestants and not necessarily to have a battery of questions coming mainly from the moderators. Yeah. That was our posture.
Yeah. You are hinting of another debate. When is that one coming on?
The next debate is Monday next week.
Are you trying to maybe adopt something different from what we had yesterday? Looking back.
What will happen will be maybe a few tweaks here and there after we've done our postmortem in terms of how more exciting we can get it to be. I still think that went down well. I do not think that we want to compare to the IEA. It's not a competitive edge. We are not interested in that.
Then that means you are not even organizing a vice presidential debate in this case.
We are considering it. We're considering other things that we will unfold, you know, but mainly we are not doing an IEA criteria. There's an initiative from GBC, and we want as much as possible for it to be governed by some of the considerations that we think will make it a good television studio production.
Well, Mr. Mike Amunkwafo, we want to thank you very much. Maybe we'll get to talk before the next debate.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
That is the director of Ghana Television, Mike Amunkwafo. You are still live on Behind the News, getting us on Radio BR and on Volta Star Radio, together with Twin City and Radio Centra. Some of your tests here. Atise from Georgia is saying, kindly ask the Deputy Finance Minister to explain why they increased their own salaries. The President has referred that for further clarification and all, but he's not here. The next time we get him, we'll certainly put it out to him. And Elias from Tamale is thinking that it's sickening to hear the NDC government trumpet a single-digit inflationary figure when it doesn't conform with realities on the ground. And Baba Musa UDS, President Mama is our preferred presidential candidate in the December elections because he has the requisite competence and experience to govern this country successfully. Brahim Zakaria, Dr. Indubi is the number one communicator in the country. He's really an authority on a number of subjects. And Joe Banyewa thinks there is greater hope in President Mame's announcement of real jobs for the youth and count on his fortunes. Behind the news, we move on to the next story. In a manner that sends the debate back to the church and politics, Dr. Mensah Otabo has been pushed to the ropes in another tape saga. The preacher man in the tape is heard to have made statements that seem to cast political insinuations. However, Dr. Mensah Otabo feels the action is contrived to give him a bad name and has fiercely rebutted assertions that seem to color his statements. But his response has drawn a sharp rebuttal from the NDC. For some, he should have kept quiet on the issue. But what would that mean? Are there legal implications for the use of his voice? Stephen Frimpong Manson is a legal practitioner and also a lecturer at the Ghana Institute of Journalism. We want to explore a few of the issues around this tape saga. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Would you say that Dr. Otabu should have kept his calm and not even spoken at all?
Well, it is interesting that people are making this position. You see, the man, as a citizen of Ghana, has the right to speak on any issue. As a man of God, too, on the pulpit, well, he can express issues on national concerns. But then the way that the whole thing has turned out is what is the matter. The issue is that even if he expressed this issue of free SHS not feasible, sometime in a contest that probably was explaining the national situation. But the way that it has been done in terms of piecing his pieces together and then presenting it as a viewpoint to really get a political edge over another is the issue that we have to look at. Now, the man has come out to say that, yes, indeed, he admits that all the positions he made them. But the extent to which it has been put together, I think that is where the issue is. Now, the man has come out clearly to say that that is something that is really against his person and at the same time against his outlook as a man of God. Now, those who use the tape in that manner, in terms of the law, I think they should have sought permission from him. You see, this is a man of God. His tape is all over the place. People play them, and the intent behind that is that.
And people say because it's already in the public domain, you don't even need permission to play it.
Well, people think that is the case. You don't have the right to play it, to listen to it, but not in the manner that it has featured now. The issue is that it is in the public domain, all right, and everybody has access to it. But to piece it in order to really defame him, to color him in the manner that we have in terms of politics. That is what the issue is. So then, the question is, do those people who did that have the right to do it? Your right really can go to the extent of a petition that is imposed on you because you cannot just do everything and go scot-free. They have used it. The man is saying that he is really not happy about the way it has been done. And that is the issue. That is the implication of the issue. And here, the man has the right to go forward and say that, yes, you people have not tried because you have used it beyond the expectation that I put it in the domain. And therefore, he can sue.
Yeah.
He has the right to go to court.
Mr. Frimpong Manson, let's use a typical example. You've made these statements now on air, and then the next time around you hear maybe another radio station also using the same voice and playing back. Are you saying that they will have to ask your permission before using it elsewhere?
Well, in the context, if it is just in a continual debate of this, I'm saying something and this is what I said. But to use, you see, they use it as a propaganda machinery. This is what the problem is. They use the voice as a propaganda machinery. So if, for example, I've spoken something somewhere and you use it in a propaganda machinery in a form that I don't intend to have it that way, yes, I can go ahead and see. Because it is against my public interest, you see. And this is where the issue is. But for people to say that the man should have come out, I don't understand. Because the intent behind it is not what is in the domain now.
So it's assuming...
that people should use it to glorify themselves, to edify themselves,
yeah.
to really enrich their interest in the words of God, or so, in the work of God.
So let's say if it's not a politically charged environment... Let's say if it's not a politically charged environment and this tape, the same voice was being played, that one, there won't be any problem at all. Is that it?
If it is the issue of this SHS has not come and it is played, I mean, that is for public interest and somebody will say for common relief. It can be played for common relief. But in the situation that we find ourselves, that is where the contention is. And therefore, it has defamed the man beyond reasonable doubt, you see. So now, the man has to clear himself. And clear himself, he came on there, and then he made all those positions. Tell me every battle that the man should have not done that. He has rather even created a problem for himself. Who is saying that? Why are you saying that he has created a problem for himself? He has to clear himself. You see? You have to clear himself so that the man will also have his liberties and then operate as a man of God. And that status quo ultimately. You see, the way it is, really, I don't really agree with those who are saying that the man should have come out. Why should he have come out?
Okay. Reverend Pullman, so I want to thank you very much. At least you said that that person can go to court based on what he thinks is defamation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
So, Sylvie Fripo-Manso is a legal practitioner and also a lecturer at the Ghana Institute of Journalism. Behind the news, before we go, AU Farouk and Tamale saying thanks to GBC for organizing such a wonderful presidential debate. Thank you to AU Farouk for that commendation. And Veronica Winiba, Ghana is a peaceful country. Let's maintain this peace for this year's election. And Yaya from Tumu says, Dr. Ndum, we, the people of Sisala East, are behind you. Go, Papa. And Amwab Jacob, if people like Dr. Otado can run from the truth, then who can we believe? We are living in interesting times. And Yao Sankide Taifa says, Ghana's economy for almost 4 years is the worst. The sad thing is that we always have members of government telling Ghanaians that the economy is growing and we have single-digit inflation. But this is not reflecting the pockets of the ordinary Ghanaian. And Asari Kunedu, you didn't tell us where you sent that one from, but you are saying that all that matters is that at the end of it, Ghanaians will have their peace and still be able to walk about and be able to debate. Thank you very much for that one. And this is where we wrap it up. I want to thank so much Hannah Owusu Bempa, our sound controller, and the production team of Christopher Etisiedu, Edmond Tete, Bright Agama, Agatha Samwa, and John Pudi. George Asekre was our summarizer. My name is Kingsley Obinchere.